This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today with mental health, where a proposal at the State House has put the debate over involuntary treatment back in the spotlight. In Massachusetts, a judge can order someone into involuntary hospitalization for mental health treatment under certain circumstances. We are only one of three states, however, where a judge cannot mandate that someone receive involuntary outpatient mental health treatment. That's treatment without hospitalization. There's a new piece of legislation that would change that, and it is controversial. WBUR senior correspondent Deb Becker covers mental health, criminal justice, and the intersection of the two. She has been tracking this debate, joins us now. Welcome, Deb.
Thank you.
So let's dive into the law. When we say that this new bill proposes mandatory outpatient treatment, what does that mean?
Well, State Senator Cindy Friedman filed this bill. It's called an Act to Provide Critical Community Health Services. And basically, it would allow someone to ask the court to mandate outpatient treatment for someone. The legislation contains several criteria by which a judge could make a determination about involuntary commitment. And those criteria include someone would have to have been diagnosed with a serious mental illness. They would have to be considered, quote, gravely disabled and not able to care for themselves. They would have to have a history of not complying with treatment and a recent history of incarceration or psychiatric hospitalization or incidents of violence. And then once a petition for involuntary treatment is filed, the court would have to hold a hearing within 4 days and determine whether it would order treatment. And then the court would determine who would be the provider.
So let's say it does order treatment. What if somebody doesn't comply, Deb?
Well, then there would be a hearing to review whether the treatment plan needs to be amended. A provider could also say this person is not complying, so they need to go to an inpatient psychiatric facility instead. So there are many steps that would be that are outlined in this legislation that would have to be followed if someone was in noncompliance. And Senator Friedman said that noncompliance would not result in punitive measures such as incarceration.
Okay, so we noted at the top what is in place in Massachusetts right now is a judge can commit somebody to hospitalization involuntarily. So let's compare. How does that work right now?
Well, that's a state law known as Section 12, where a judge can order someone to an involuntary commitment to a psychiatric hospital for an evaluation. Under the law, a person can be held for up to 3 days, and then there would have to be another hearing to determine if the person would be held for longer-term treatment in a residential facility or hospital. This bill is different because it would allow the court to order treatment in the community. Those who support the bill say there needs to be more done for those who are not in obvious immediate crisis, because the legal standard to commit someone under Section 12 is that there must be proof that the person is a harm to themselves or others. And they say that's a high bar. And so there should be a way to get treatment in the community for those folks who may not be in a dangerous situation.
So, Deb, it seems a little confusing about whether or not somebody who is mandated into hospitalization has to actually submit to treatment, do they?
Yes. A person would be required to comply with treatment. Providers would have to testify about compliance. If they weren't in compliance, a judge could order a longer commitment. And, you know, the opponents say this is dehumanizing. It allows the government to interfere with healthcare decisions. And they're really concerned about a focus on ensuring that someone is taking psychiatric medications. They say that there have been many instances where people experience difficult side effects from medications, and the courts or orders don't take that into account, and someone may be forced to take something that's harmful.
So, Deb, let's talk about the opponents and proponents here. We've started to get into that. As I understand it, most of the mental health advocacy groups in the state are opposed to this legislation. So tell us about that.
Yeah, almost all of them really are opposed. And they mentioned several reasons why. I talked with the Disability Law Center's Rick Glassman. He points to various studies that he says show that court mandates do not improve a patient's compliance with treatment. And he said there are other studies showing that involuntary outpatient commitments are disproportionately used for people of color. But mostly, I think Glassman's you know, biggest concern is that he says when a court orders treatment, it's not effective. This is what he said.
It's coercive. It interferes with personal dignity and human rights. And it forces providers to become probation officers, and it disrupts therapeutic relationships. And it diverts resources from people who really want assistance, and it prioritizes instead people who don't want assistance.
And Tiziana, I also spoke with Sarah Davidow. She's with the group The Wildflower Alliance, and it's an organization that advocates for more supports for people with mental illness and a more holistic approach to treatment overall. And Davidow says research suggests that taking away someone's agency in their mental health care treatment causes more harm than good. And she admits that the issue is very complicated. It all depends on the patient, the family involved, the circumstances. But basically, she looks at this as if there are two ways the state can go, either forcing treatment or considering other individualized methods to help people with mental illness. Here she is.
There's two pathways. There's a pathway down which we can form a treatment system such as the one we have that focuses on trying to control people. And how many people do we lose down that path versus the path where we have space for many more interpretations of what's at the root of someone's distress? We lose people down both paths. But my experience tells me, my community's experience tells me, and research is telling me, we lose more people down the path where the focus is on taking control and power.
And Davidow is planning an advocacy day at the State House this spring to tell lawmakers about what she sees as problems with this bill and with court-ordered treatment. And she thinks state resources should be used for other things, bolstering the current mental health system and peer respite centers instead of forcing people into a standard form of treatment that might not be effective for them.
So then you also came across stories where people do support this idea of court-ordered treatment. Mm-hmm. And you talk some in some of your reporting about the Cappucci family. Tell us about them.
Yeah, I spoke with Rachel Cappucci at her home in Shrewsbury, and she spent years trying to get mental health help for her older brother, Brad. He developed schizophrenia in his late 20s. He had done well all through high school, college. He was living on his own. And then he lost his job. He moved back in with his mom in his 20s, and he just was deteriorating mentally until he reached the point where Rachel said he was in a psychotic state permanently. So they did utilize Section 12 and involuntarily commit Brad to psychiatric facilities, but he did not meet the legal definition of being an imminent harm to himself or others. And then in 2019, when they tried to commit him again, the judge did not commit him, and he said he was going west for a job. At this point, they did have a formal diagnosis that Brad had schizophrenia. They didn't hear from him for several months. And in 2021, police called them to say that Brad's remains were found outside Yellowstone National Park, where he apparently had been living under a tarp. And Rachel said her brother died of hypothermia. This is what she told me.
He didn't want to die, I know that, but there was no place for him. He was homeless, you know, and that's the harsh truth. He was loved and he needed help. Nobody wanted to help.
And so Rachel believes there should be more options for those who are trying to get mental health treatment for a loved one, especially a loved one who may not be aware of the extent of their illness. And she wonders if involuntary outpatient commitment might have helped. And lawmakers will likely hear stories like hers as they debate this bill.
So you referenced the lawmakers there. Let's move to that spot now, Deb. What are lawmakers who are sponsoring this legislation saying about their desire to see it enacted?
Well, Senator Friedman says, you know, right now, many jails and prisons are full of people who are incarcerated because of serious mental illness that she thinks perhaps that incarceration could have been avoided if it was treated sooner and loved ones were allowed to intervene. Here's what she says.
I have a number of people who have come to me to talk about their children or loved ones who are in jail because of serious crimes that were committed because of their very serious mental illness. And the families and loved ones' complete lack of ability to get them help.
So Friedman believes that this legislation would help reduce the incarceration of folks with serious mental illness, could also help reduce homelessness and risks if someone with a serious mental illness is not in treatment and is not taking their psychiatric medications.
So, Deb, you also follow addiction treatment requirements. How is this proposed law the same or different than the way the state handles that?
Well, this is different. Addiction treatment is under the law known as Section 35, not to boggle you down with all the sections here, but that law allows a court to involuntarily commit someone to addiction treatment for up to 90 days. For someone to be committed, the court would also have to determine that the person was a harm to themselves or others and that their addiction was dangerous. The largest locked involuntary addiction treatment facilities are for men, and they're located in state jails and prisons, which has been very controversial and is subject to a lawsuit at the moment.
And Deb, is there any kind of pilot or other sample program that gives us a sense of how this might work in practice here in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, there is, and supporters point to it. This is a relatively new program. It's called the Boston Outpatient Assisted Treatment, or BOAT, program. It started in 2020 for those facing criminal charges in Boston Municipal Court. This program is voluntary, though, and as I said, for those facing criminal charges, if the participant complies with treatment, their criminal charges might be dismissed. Since it began, 163 people have participated, but only 31 have graduated. So that's less than 20%. Supporters acknowledge also that this program offers an array of services with Boston Medical Center. So there are coaches, therapists, psychiatrists, peer support, housing specialists, all of these wraparound services that are not typically offered in community treatment settings.
We're talking to WBUR's Deborah Becker about a new proposal to allow courts to require involuntary outpatient mental health therapy. Deb, okay, so one of the questions that comes up, I mean, you, Martha Biebinger, have both done a great deal of reporting about our lack of mental health capacity here in the state in terms of beds, providers, et cetera. The court, you know, in this bill, does that take this into account if a judge orders? Does capacity have anything to do with it, or are those things at loggerheads? Do you understand my question?
I do, and they are at loggerheads. I mean, Senator Friedman says this would put the state on the hook, and the state would be forced to provide these services. I spoke with the judge, Kathleen Coffey, who's in charge of the BOAT program, and she says it would be unethical for the court to mandate treatment if it doesn't exist or there aren't the resources or the capacity for it. And we know that there are capacity issues. We're well aware of mental health boarding and hospital emergency departments, for example. And some of this is capacity. And of course, there's also a staffing crisis in behavioral health care right now. But one thing that folks mention frequently when I was talking with them for this story is that the system has gotten a big infusion of services at the start of this year with the implementation of the Baker administration's so-called behavioral health roadmap. And so we have new community mental health centers that have opened, urgent mental health healthcare facilities that are open 24/7, mobile crisis teams, a new behavioral health helpline. A lot of state resources were put into this to make sure that mental health care is more accessible to folks round the clock and it's more convenient. So opponents point to this new influx of services and they say the state should wait to see how this works out before there's a move toward court-ordered treatment.
Do you have a sense from the legislature about how much of a chance this bill has, Deb?
It's unclear, really. I think there's a lot more awareness about mental health, and I think folks would like to see some type of action by the legislature. But, you know, this proposal's come up before. It never made it out of committee, largely because of some strong opposition. So, you know, we'll have to see where it goes. There's also more organized support now, though. There's a new group called AOT Now. This is primarily Massachusetts families who've had a hard time getting help for their loved ones. There have been some high-profile police shootings of people in mental health crisis, most recently in Cambridge in January. So there's increased awareness that we need ways to deal with mental health and we need to do better.
Deb, what are you watching for next now?
I think we'll see what happens in the hearings on this. Some of the folks I spoke with, even folks who opposed this in the past, didn't want to talk about it this time. So it'll be interesting how this debate plays out. But certainly what we do know is that every city in the country is seeing this sort of intersection of mental illness, addiction, homelessness. We have the most visible here in Massachusetts being Mass and Cass, but it's everywhere. And, you know, something needs to be done to address, you know, what we're supposed to do to help people who are in crisis. And whether that needs to be a lot more services and a real financial commitment, that's a tough sell. So it remains to be seen, but it'll be an interesting debate.
Deborah Becker is senior correspondent with WBUR covering mental health and criminal justice. Thanks for breaking that down for us, Deb. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.